This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In today's program, you can hear our feature, The African Synod, The Church Alive in Africa Today. First, however, our bulletin of church news, followed by Africa News Panorama. We shall close today's program with Millennium Appointment. I am Festus Terawali. Pope Leo XIV on Monday celebrated Mass for officials of the Roman Curia on the Jubilee of the Holy See in St. Peter's Basilica. In his homily, the Holy Father recalled that the Apostolic See draws its fruitfulness from Jesus Christ and the example of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Devin Watkins reports.
As the Church marks the Jubilee of the Holy See, Pope Leo XIV spent Monday morning with employees and officials of the Roman Curia. In his homily at Mass in St. Peter's Basilica, the Pope reflected on the spiritual foundations of the Apostolic See. The Gospel reading from John, he said, recounts that Jesus entrusted his mother to the beloved disciple from the cross. Pope Leo added that the Church's fruitfulness is the very fruitfulness of Mary, which is realized in the lives of the Church's individual members. Each Christian, he said, is called to live the love of Jesus as experienced on the cross.
La fecondità della Chiesa è la stessa fecondità di Maria.
This fruitfulness of Mary and of the Church is inseparably linked to her conformity to Christ, said the Pope. The Holy See is holy as the Church is holy, in her original core, in the fabric from which she is woven. Pope Leo said the Apostolic See safeguards the holiness of her roots, just as she is safeguarded by that same holiness. It is no less true that she also lives in the holiness of each of her members, he said.
Il modo migliore di servire la Santa Sede.
The best way to serve the Holy See, he added, is to strive to be holy, each of us according to his or her state of life and the task entrusted. He offered the example of a priest bearing a heavy personal burden due to his ministry who continues to carry out his work in his Holy See office as best he can with love and faith. A lay curial official with a difficult home life, said the Pope, also bears witness to the fruitfulness of Mary and the Church when he or she carries on their work with commitment. The Church's fruitfulness, said Pope Leo, is always connected to the grace that flowed from the pierced heart of Jesus, along with blood and water, which are symbols of the sacraments. In conclusion, Pope Leo XIV invited employees and officials of the Holy See to let God's Word be a lamp to light their steps. I'm Devin Watkins.
In the wake of Pope Leo's election on May 8, 2025, a new Vatican documentary titled Leon de Peru, Spanish for Leo of Peru, explores the early ministry of Pope Leo XIV during his years in Peru. Produced by Vatican Media, the film follows his journey through cities like Lima, Chiclayo, and Trujillo, where he served as priest, bishop, and apostolic administrator. He is remembered for preaching, teaching, and aiding communities in times of crisis, from devastating floods to the COVID-19 pandemic. Leon de Peru premieres soon on Vatican Media's official channels. The trailer of the documentary is now available on our website, vaticannews.va. Meanwhile, in an interview marking 1 month since Pope Leo's election, Archbishop Alfred Adewale Martins of the Catholic Archdiocese of Lagos in Nigeria reflects on the gift of the Holy Father to the Church in this time of history.
Well, I believe that from all indications and from all the events that have taken place so far, certainly he, Pope Leo, is God's choice for our world of today. I believe that since the announcement of his election was made, he has had quite an impact on the entire world in many ways. people from diverse backgrounds have acknowledged that God was at work in his election. And so we just thank God for him. We just thank God for him. And the Pope, in his gestures, in his the way he has spoken, the things he has said, have also been inspiring. And so we believe that certainly God is at work. Is being our Pope at this point in time. And so we just certainly need to continue to pray for him, that as he carries the burden of office and faces all the responsibilities of being Pope, he will do it with the grace of God alive and active, and with the Holy Spirit guiding his actions. So we pray for him in that direction. And we also hope and pray that being a voice for peace at this point in time, peace in the world, and peace within the church as well, that his actions and decisions will work towards the attainment of peace in the world. The way he has spoken on behalf of, spoken for peace in Gaza, in Ukraine, and other parts of the world, certainly is having good impact on everyone that is listening to him. We hope that they will follow his advice. We also believe that the need to fortify the unity of the church in the midst of the different differences that we have today is extremely important, and the gestures that we are seeing already gives an indication that he will be that bridge builder among the different groups, different positions within our church at this point in time. And the expectation of as they say, virtue lies in the mean between two extremes, that he will strike that balance in dealing with situations with the church. So we certainly will continue to pray for him, and we have high expectation that with the help of God, our church will continue to flourish and flourish even better than ever before.
That was Archbishop Alfred Adewale Martins of the Catholic Archdiocese of Lagos, Nigeria, speaking there to Sister Oluwakemi Akinleye of the Daughters of St. Paul. The Catholic Bishop of Katsina Diocese in Nigeria, Most Reverend Gerald Maman Musa, has called for a media culture rooted in peace journalism. In an interview with Delphine Asu on the sidelines of the recent Communications Week in Nigeria, Bishop Musa appealed to people who work in the media to practice constructive and peace journalism in reporting insecurity, banditry and violence in the West African nation.
Speaking against the backdrop of promoting peace journalism in Nigeria, Most Reverend Gerald Maman Musa x-rayed the various factors contributing to the security crisis in Nigeria.
Many people are affected. Priests are affected by the insurgency, by the banditry, by the kidnapping, by the shooting, by unknown gunmen. And many other people from different fields of life are also affected. It is very, very easy to frame this whole thing within religious lenses. But I think we also have to be broad-minded to know that, yes, there is the religious dimension. There is also the economic factor. There is also the historical grudges that have gone between people. But we know that the crisis, especially in Benue State and other states, you know, we have all these factors mixed together, the historical, the economic, the religious dimension, as well as the political dimension. So you may say it is an attempt to silence the gospel. That's looking at it from the religious dimension. But don't forget also that it's about seizure of land, fertile land from the people. We heard what was said during this conference on gentle communication, that many cases around the country about insurgencies are not cases of clashes, but are cases whereby aggressors attack innocent people and seize their lands and properties.
when asked about the implementation of peace journalism in Nigeria, the prelate drew attention to an aspect of peace journalism that is often neglected by the media.
Giving voice to victims. Because most times when there are conflicts, we hear the voices of authority, local government authorities, state authorities, or government authorities, without hearing the voice of the victims, those who are affected. Sometimes even media practitioners tend to speak for people. But it is important that we listen to the voices of victims. And that's one of the duties or one of the principles of peace journalism, that we give a voice to those who are affected. We give a voice to those who are victims.
In Abuja, Nigeria, Delphine Asu reporting.
This coming Sunday, June the 15th, we'll see the beatification of Floribert Bwana Chubin Kositi, a layman who was murdered in the Democratic Republic of Congo 18 years ago. Servant of God Kositi is recognized as a matter of honesty and moral integrity. The beatification mass on the solemnity of the Most Holy Trinity will be presided over by the prefect of the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, Cardinal Marcello Semeraro, at the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls, beginning at 5:30 p.m. local time in Rome. For more on the saint's life, visit our web portal, vaticannews.va. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
I am Sister Mfaru Chakuyinga. Rwanda has said it is withdrawing its membership from the Economic Community of Central African States. This comes as a result of diplomatic tensions in the region arising from the row of the Rwanda-backed M23 rebels in eastern Congo. M23 rebels seized eastern Congo's two largest cities of Goma and Bukavu early this year. Governments in the region are unhappy with Rwanda's role in the conflict and over the weekend prevented Rwanda from assuming the chairmanship of the regional bloc. Instead, governments opted for the chairmanship of Equatorial Guinea. In return, Rwanda announced that it was withdrawing from the organization. Members of the SADC Ministers of Trade at a meeting held recently in Harare, Zimbabwe, have said that it will need to reassess trade partnership, especially with the United States, in the face of rising U.S. trade tariffs. The members are also disappointed with the United States' withdrawal of traditional development support. The Committee of Ministers in the Southern African Development Community said time had come for the SADC countries to shape and determine their destiny. In Kenya's Kibera slum, a fintech company called Afribit Africa is introducing Bitcoin as a form of payment to improve financial inclusion. Around 200 people in Kibera are now using Bitcoin, which allows them to save and transact without traditional banking documentation. While promoters see it as a path to financial freedom, experts warn of risks due to Bitcoin's volatility and lack of regulation. Despite concerns, some residents appreciate the low transaction fees and potential growth. You are tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
The African Synod, the Church Alive in Africa Today.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. The president of the Symposium of Episcopal Conferences of Africa and Madagascar, Cardinal Fridolin Ambongo, was in South Africa recently for a symposium organized by the Conference of Major Superiors of Africa and Madagascar, known by the acronym COMSAM. Speaking to our colleague Sheila Purish on the sidelines of the May 23rd to the 25th symposium in Johannesburg, Cardinal Ambongo, a member of the Order of the Friars Minor Capuchin and Archbishop of Kinshasa, urged members of religious congregations in Africa to embrace synodality and social justice issues. The final document from the Synod on Synodality, published in October last year, described synodality as a path of spiritual renewal and structural reform that enables the Church to be more participatory and missionary so that it can work with every man and woman, radiating the light of Christ.
I was invited as the president of the SECAM to share my experience of Synod. I'm here because a Synod talk about the changing we need in the Church. We have to change. The Church have to change its way of being Church. Because of that, this changing is true also for the religious life. In Africa, we have many congregation, but the way we have to go ahead with the religious life in Africa need a change, because everything changed around us. I'm here in behalf of all bishops to share, to talk with religious.
Thank you very much for your very powerful presentation with regards to the Synod on Synodality. As you said, there are so many who are still not on board when it comes to implementing Synod on Synodality. What is your message for those that are still not on board, that are still not implementing, yet we are living the implementation phase of the Synod on Synodality?
That's true. It's not easy to get people together for implementation of the Synod, mainly the priest. So I can say, if you want to go ahead with synodality, with the spirit of synodality, we have to change ourselves. We need conversion, what we called a synodal conversion. We need to change.
But now, Cardinal Ambongo, during these 2 days, we've heard many different presentations, but I think one of the strongest ones as well, apart from yours, was the one on Africa, the social political issues that Africa faces as a continent. You yourself have written a lot about what's happening in Africa in terms of mineral resources being the root cause of so many wars. So this was emphasized here, the role of religious when it comes to these socio-political issues that, or rather challenges that are faced in Africa. What are your words?
The first mission, vocation of religious life is to bring the good news to people, to bring evangelization to people. But if you saw today, we look at the situation in Africa, many of our brothers and sisters are suffering because of injustices or war, poverty, hunger, everything, and bad government in Africa. If we want to bring the good news to people, we cannot talk about Jesus and not look at this reality of people. So religious people, religious life in Africa have to take care also on this reality. If people is suffering, religious have to be with these, together with these people, and to help these people to cut off this situation, and to bring people free from all of those bad situation. So, as I said today, you cannot say you are religious in Africa, and you are not together with people who try to get freedom, to get a new life for his future.
Now, you've just recently returned from Rome, where you were at the conclave electing a new pope. Now, we all know that Pope Leo XIV, who, by the way, was at the synod with you and other delegates, we know that he has been to Africa, to different parts in Africa. He's been a missionary bishop prior to becoming cardinal and eventually being elected the new pope. What are your hopes with his papacy, especially in relation to Africa?
I hope, I'm a little bit sure, that he will continue the political of the Pope Francis about Africa. Because the first word he pronounced after his election was the peace, the peace. And he is ready to help us to go ahead with what we are doing now in Africa for liberation of people. I think something will change in his politic, but I'm a little bit sure he was there as prefect of the Congregation of the Bishop. And he participated together with us to the synod. He shared with us what we did during the synod. I'm almost sure that he will continue with the way the Pope Francis did.
That was the president of the Symposium of Episcopal Conferences of Africa and Madagascar, Cardinal Fridolin Ambongo, Archbishop of Kinshasa in the Democratic Republic of Congo. He was speaking to our colleague Sheila Pirish. And that's all for this edition of the African Synod, The Church Alive in Africa Today. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Tarawali.
And now, our feature, Millennium Appointment. The Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, is one of the United Nations agencies that are widely spread around the world, especially in developing countries, where it is helping rural farmers to achieve food security without seeking food handouts from humanitarian organizations. Dr. Ryan Paulson is the director of the Emergencies Department of the FAO. He says there is a need to focus much attention on people who live in rural areas to cope in times of emergencies such as floods, long droughts, and other disasters like the invasion of pests, especially locusts, in parts of Africa and earthquakes.
The vast majority of people in need of humanitarian assistance are to be found in rural areas. These are farmers. These are people who are attached to the land, or they're fisher folk, right? And so that's the starting point we need for our emergency response. Fundamentally, it's about putting resources in the hands of affected farming families. This means, for example, seeds, tools, technical assistance to allow them to plant for a coming season. It means keeping animals alive during a drought period or during a winter, and we do that through provision of emergency animal feed, even medical assistance, veterinary assistance to animals to keep these precious assets alive. Often it's also about just putting cash in the hands of people. I mean, these activities together are usually what people need to get through a difficult period.
Dr. Paulson told reporters in Rome recently that in disaster-prone countries, humanitarian response should not only consist in giving out food, it should also include preparing people early enough for emergencies, especially now when different parts of the world are experiencing the effects of climate change. This is because early preparations before disaster strikes is less costly in terms of human lives and resources.
Early detection, treatment, allows us to respond at scale. Why wait until the disaster happens before you respond? from a human dignity perspective, who wouldn't rather be able to protect themselves, their families, rather than have to wait for a handout or wait for assistance after a disaster took place? It's a cost-effective way to respond.
Giving examples on how it is important to anticipate disasters, Dr. Paulsen said Somalia in Eastern Africa is one of the countries in the world which need this kind of help because it is often a victim of long droughts that leave hundreds of thousands of people without food.
What we're seeing in the Horn of Africa is an example of early warning analysis and anticipatory action calls going really unheeded. Somalia is a really good example of where a time-sensitive agricultural intervention would enable a family to be able to stay on their land, to not be forced to displace to a camp outside of an urban setting. Our experience in Somalia and elsewhere tells us that if people's animals are still alive, if they have crops in the ground, if they've been able to plant seeds, if there are things to tend, more often than not, they will not be forced to flee elsewhere. And so this is the most effective and most dignified response that we can possibly mount.
Some of the emergencies in some countries are caused by armed conflicts. Dr. Paulsen explained how the Food and Agriculture Organization operates in conflict situations.
The way we work in conflict settings is grounded in our technical expertise. Let me give an example from Tigray. FAO, of course, was working in Tigray and working across Ethiopia before the conflict and the fighting erupted. And in a context where there was conflict unfolding, people were still able to grow. Farmers in Tigray, with support from FAO and others, produced 900,000 metric tons of food. So equivalent to 6 to 7 months of the food requirements of that region.
That was Dr. Ryan Paulsen, the director of the Emergencies Department of the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO.
I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime.
You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.